you?
I'm Owen's friend.
Owen doesn't have a friend.
That's because he's shy.
No, he's not. He's fat and he's stupid. Get out of my house!
That marbled, gravelly voice you probably recognize belongs to actress Anne Ramsey. And it's from Danny DeVito's crime comedy, Throw Mama from the Train. Hunched over with a scowl and wielding a cane as a blunt weapon, she played a mother nobody could love. Abrasive, mean, and abusive to her immature son Owen, played by Danny DeVito, who intends to kill her. When she screams his name, it's like nails on a chalkboard.
Owen! Owen! Get me a soda with some ice in it!
But that's exactly what DeVito wanted in the character. In a 1988 article about Anne for People magazine, DeVito said, "I kept adding more and more lines for her and more oil to her hair. I wanted her to be as far from a sweet mama as we could get." It worked, and for her performance, Anne Ramsey was nominated for an Academy Award.
Anne Ramsey and Throw Mama from the Train!
It was certainly unexpected. After 17 years, around the age of 58, Anne was thrust into the spotlight. Her story is similar to so many other performers in Hollywood, in that she found a great deal of success during a point in her life when she, perhaps, least expected it. I'm Brandon Hardesty, and this is No Small Parts. It's difficult to theorize how a young Anne Ramsey may have reacted had she heard the names of some of her 63 roles that would later be listed on her IMDb page. Battle Axe, Massive Woman, Spinster Number 2, and as she aged, they didn't get any more flattering. Bag Lady, Old Witch, The Hag. Anne would eventually make a career out of playing mean characters. But when you look at pictures of Anne at a young age, she seems like anything but. Born in 1929 in Omaha, Nebraska, she was the daughter of Nathan Mobley, an insurance executive, and Eleanor Smith, a former national treasurer of the Girl Scouts of the USA. Anne fell in love with the prospect of acting when she was just 4 years old after seeing a movie with her father, The Petrified Forest, a 1936 film noir based on a stage play and starring Leslie Howard, Humphrey Bogart, and Betty Davis.
On the edge of the American desert lies a forest turned to stone, the Petrified Forest. Grim, silent, mysterious. Here in a lonely desert tavern, fate draws together a strange company.
It's pretty mature viewing for a four-year-old. When I was 4 years old, I was rewinding and playing back the whole booby trap segment of Home Alone. I guess it was different then. Anne grew up in the Depression, and the theater must have been a sanctuary for a lot of struggling families. Anne and her family eventually moved to the East Coast, and her interest in acting continued. Shakespeare camp at 7, then eventually the drama department at Bennington College in Vermont. Before ever appearing on television, Anne did a lot of theater, supplementing her income with work as a doctor's secretary, as well as an event coordinator for the NFL. When she was at Bennington College, she met Logan Ramsey, the man who would be her husband until her death in 1988. A little about Logan, because he pops up a lot in Anne's story. Logan was truly what you would call a character actor, never quite breaking through to another level, but always working steadily. Physically, he was always at least a little overweight. If you had to compare him to another actor, you might say he looks like Oliver Platt or Joe Don Baker, and could easily play a villain, like he did in the second season episode of Star Trek, Bread and Circuses.
There may be over 400 men on your ship, Captain, but they can be brought down if it's handled properly.
Do you really believe I can be made to order my own people down?
I believe this, Captain, that you would do almost anything rather than see these two dear friends put slowly to death.
But he could also play a nice guy, like he often did when he worked with his wife. In a People magazine interview, Logan jokes, "We don't usually rent out as a couple." Still, they ended up appearing together several times over the years, including the 1980 comedy Any Which Way You Can, in which Clint Eastwood has a series of misadventures with a pet orangutan. As they drive on a lone highway at night, Logan muses,
"Well, Loretta, we've talked about it for 20 years, but now we're doing it. We're in California."
"I hear people here are a little peculiar."
"Well, Loretta, folks are just folks, world over."
Then Anne notices something outside the passenger window. Eastwood and his orangutan friend peeing on the side of the road.
Luther.
Yeah?
I think we should go back to Iowa.
This was one of the kinder roles that she played. Even as early as the 1970s, Anne tended to play mean characters, and part of it was most likely because of how she looked. Slightly overweight, and a bit of a raspy voice from being a lifetime smoker. It may sound harsh to judge someone on their looks, but that's what Hollywood does. When you look a certain way, you get cast in certain parts. I once took an acting class in which the teacher had us take turns performing an exercise. A student would sit in the middle of the room surrounded by everyone else, and that student would be holding a pen and paper. Every other person in the room would then shout out roles that they thought that particular person would be right for. For example, an attractive bohemian woman in her early 30s sat in the middle. She wore lots of long necklaces, bracelets, and had a general peaceful way about her. People began shouting out things like therapist, yoga instructor, earth mother, hippie, and it went on like that until she had a list of terms in front of her that were unapologetically honest, from people that she didn't know. The point of the exercise was to get to know how other people perceived you. If a casting director were to look at a headshot of you, these terms might be bouncing around in their head of parts that you would be right for. Now, if Anne Ramsey were to sit in the middle of that circle, she might have heard character types that she eventually played throughout her career. For example, a nun, like she did in a 1976 episode of Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman.
Oh, Sister Florence wasn't allowed to go with us.
Or a taxicab driver, like in the pilot episode of the original Wonder Woman series starring Linda Carter.
Can't you go any faster?
If you want to drive, I'll let you drive.
Or how about a nurse? She did that several times in her career. In a 1979 episode of Chips, Officer Frank Poncherello, played by Eric Estrada, is surprised and shocked when he expected a more attractive nurse to be helping him recover in the hospital.
It's time for the patient's bath.
What happened to my regular nurse?
The redhead?
Yeah.
She was transferred.
Oh, that's too bad. We were simpatico.
Let go of the sheet and turn over.
Kind of a mean joke, but I guess you just gotta roll with it. Her looks were often the butt of jokes. For example, in a 1983 episode of Three's Company, John Ritter waits impatiently behind Anne as she withdraws money from an ATM and sticks it in her brassiere for safekeeping. John's reaction?
Bet that's safer than in the bank, huh?
Or how about this scene from an episode of Little House on the Prairie in which Anne played Mrs. Schiller, a cook in a restaurant who sits back in the kitchen greedily eating the customer's food.
Will you look at her? Ms. Schiller, customer out there can't eat his food.
He's never satisfied. I his cook.
What's that prove? You eat everything. You'd eat anything. Now, what did he order?
Edison biscuits.
And so Anne continued, a landlady here, a bus driver there, and a notable role as a lunch lady in National Lampoon's Class Reunion, which, when you think about it, is perfect casting. With a cigarette hanging out of her mouth, she grabs food with her bare hands, putting it on people's plates.
I'm so happy you asked me to come out of retirement to be here this evening.
Well, we're so happy you were available.
Then in 1985, Anne had a breakout role as Mama Fratelli, one of the three primary villains in Spielberg's classic, The Goonies.
The only thing we serve is tongue.
Nothing.
You boys like tongue?
There's no other way to put it. She was mean and good at it.
Now, tell me where your other little friends are.
The fireplace.
Don't lie to me.
Honestly, we went over to Mikey's dad's place and we found a map that said that underneath this place there's buried treasure.
She reportedly got a real, terrified reaction out of her co-star, Jeff B. Cohen, who played Chunk, when she threatened to put his hand in a blender and said,
hit puree.
No, I'm too young. Now, I want to play the violin. Not my hand.
Despite the nature of her character, her castmates had nothing but good things to say about her and her husband Logan. Jeff B. Cohen said, "Anne is always playing these tough guys, but she and Logan are really nice." And in an article for LaterBloomer.com, Sean Astin recounts how after a day of shooting on the set, Anne and Logan would sit outside together, drinking Bloody Marys as the sun set. Quote, I just remember thinking, that is so cool for a second-generation actor to see how these older performers would honor the end of the day. I just loved it. That was a great moment. And Logan didn't just hang around set all the time. He was working as a villain at the same time in the soap opera The Young and the Restless for 2 years. In a People magazine interview, Logan said, "We had a huge birthday party. Our birthdays are a week apart. And the Spielberg office sent over a cake that said, 'To the two meanest people in Hollywood.'" Unfortunately, at this high point in Anne's life and career, things took a turn. As shooting wrapped on The Goonies, Anne developed a chronic sore throat that she ignored for some time. Logan finally convinced her to get it checked out. It ended up being throat cancer. As she received radiation treatments, Anne soldiered on with bit parts in Hill Street Blues and Knight Rider. The treatments ultimately failed, and she had to undergo surgery to remove part of her tongue. What was removed was then replaced with tissue from her thigh. At the time, there was no telling if the surgery would render her unable to speak, effectively ending her acting career. In a People magazine interview, Anne said, "They didn't let me talk for 2 weeks. I had to write notes to my husband. Then the doctor took the tube from my throat and said, 'Say something.' I said, 'What do you want me to say?' When I heard that I could speak, even though it wasn't too good, I burst into tears." It was at this point in Anne's life when Danny DeVito was losing hope looking for the perfect actress to play the title role in his new film, Throw Mama from the Train. In the same People magazine interview, DeVito said, "I was at my wit's end. It had gotten so bad that people were beginning to recommend their own mothers, and I was starting to check them out. Then, my casting people brought in Anne. I knew immediately that Mama had walked into my life."
"Oh, Mama!
Right into her, right, you, Aaron?
Don't start that again, Mama, and don't hit me anymore.
You love her."
There's no her, Mama.
You're writing a letter.
I'm writing a story for class, Mama. Don't you understand? I take a class. I take a nice class. And I'm gonna be a writer someday.
You know how that typing upsets me.
I'm sorry, Mama. A writer writes.
Now, arguably, Anne's slurred speech and drooling that she developed after her bout with cancer only added to the role of Mama, who, like most of her characters over the years, was supposed to be mean as a snake. Anne had this to say about her character. "My own mother was ill late in her life and became irritable and impatient. She was very demanding, and I found some elements in her for Mama. But I've never known anyone as rude and awful as Mama Lift. So I made her a composite of some of the traits I saw in women when I was younger and used to people watch in Grand Central and Pennsylvania stations in New York. Of course, it was an unflattering role, but audiences love her. And I got all my hostilities out playing the character."
"Get away from me, you horse's ass!"
"She's not a woman. She's the Terminator."
But there are more layers to this character than just mean. There are some implications that Mama is beginning to enter some kind of stage of dementia, like when she playfully sings Owen's name immediately after mocking him.
"Owen loves his Mama!
Owen loves his Mama. Owen loves his Mama. Owen loves his Mama.
And she's actually sympathetic at times. In one scene, as DeVito's character is cleaning out his mother's ears in the bathroom, he fantasizes about stabbing her in the head with a pair of scissors. But his fantasy is interrupted when his mother is genuinely thankful for helping her.
"I think she got it, sonny. I don't know what I'd do without you, Owen, baby."
It's a sweet, tender moment, and it paints her as a three-dimensional character instead of just this screaming banshee. When Anne Ramsey heard about her Oscar nomination for playing Mama, her reaction was, "It's about time. I've always prayed to be recognized, but I never would have guessed that it would come at a time in my life like this." At the Oscars ceremony that year, the camera finds Anne in the audience, beaming as Michael Douglas reads her name.
"Anne Ramsey and Throw Mama from the Train."
She lost to Olympia Dukakis that year for Moonstruck, but Anne seemed grateful just to be nominated. There is only one on-camera interview that I could find with Anne, and it was conducted prior to the ceremony. Reacting to her Oscar nomination, she had this to say.
"That means a little bit of acceptance after a long attempt to get here.
but that doesn't mean I'm here at all. I've had a lot more to do.
After Throw Mama from the Train came out, Anne was in high demand, and not just for acting roles, but appearances, like in the 1988 episode of The New Hollywood Squares.
Lisa, pick a square. What do you want to do?
Anne Ramsey.
Anne Ramsey, Academy Award nominee for Throw Mama from the Train. And according to Glamour magazine, more and more Americans now do their shopping in shopping malls. Why is it not a good idea to shop early in the morning?
Because the stores aren't open yet.
Acting-wise, she played a homeless woman in the Bill Murray comedy Scrooged.
Drink up.
You, Dave. Drink. Just for me. For you, Dave.
Her husband, Logan, also a homeless person, can be seen standing by her side. She also played a great grouchy landlady in the comedy Another Chance.
Where's the rent check, Robert?
It's an out-of-stay check. I'm waiting for it to clear. Should be clear by Wednesday.
Well, it better clear or you'll be searing out. You'll be sleeping in a tent in Griffith Park. Get the picture?
Yeah, I got it. Thanks.
If you're having trouble understanding her, you're not alone. Her throat cancer had unfortunately returned, which further slurred her speech. This impediment was perhaps most evident when she appeared in the bizarre comedy Meet the Hollowheads, which coincidentally was directed by Thomas R. Berman, a special effects makeup artist who created the makeup for Sloth in The Goonies. Her character's name is Babblax, and subtitles are provided for her character as she speaks.
You see, Pipes ain't planning on stealing anything, are you?
Uh-uh.
Besides, if you do, you know what'll happen.
Yes, yes, Station Master Babblax. We won't touch a thing, Station Master Babblax.
Damn your hatchet, Sumdrop. Let's tie your tongue together and pump you.
On August 11th, 1988, at the age of 59 and only 4 months after appearing at the Oscars, Anne Ramsey passed away at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. In an LA Times article, Danny DeVito had kind words to say about her. Quote, "I loved that woman. I loved everything about her. I was delighted over the success she achieved over the past year. She was a woman of courage and should be admired by all." So what can we learn from Anne Ramsey? In a Washington Post article that was printed following her death in 1988, Anne was quoted as saying, "Some people say I'm not a very pretty woman, but I'm a very beautiful woman inside." What I take away from her story is how sometimes in life, beauty can be born out of what other people perceive as ugly. When Anne was diagnosed with throat cancer and ended up with a speech impediment, it was no doubt an ugly experience. But it led to what is arguably her best role in Throw Mama from the Train. In the same way, although Mama was engineered to be as ugly and mean as humanly possible, it was perhaps the most ideal way for the rest of the world to see her beauty. This podcast was made possible by contributors on Patreon who have been supporting No Small Parts and other content on my YouTube channel, No Small Parts Productions, since 2015. Some of the music I use in these episodes is just music from the movies and TV shows I play clips from. Most of the jazzy music you hear is from Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com, who has a bottomless pit of royalty-free music I use all the time. Although the tune you're hearing now is actually by my dad, Brent Hardesty. Thanks, Dad! For more information about No Small Parts, visit NoSmallPartsShow.com. There you'll find other episodes of this podcast, as well as the original video essay versions of these episodes. I'm Brandon Hardesty, and thank you for listening.